We've recently raised $25 million in our IPO just about a month ago. We're looking at about just around a $30-ish million market cap. And so when you put it all in the mixture and you consider the fact that our portfolio of assets are not grassroots, they are what we call second, third inning assets, to use a baseball analogy. And what we're seeing in terms of addressing your permitting side, I would point investors to last Monday, March 2nd, we had announced that we had received our EIA approved for what is our largest exploration asset in country. And I would say certainly from my standpoint, if you asked me 2 months ago when we expected to get it, it definitely wasn't, over the course of the last week and a half. We thought later this year. It makes a lot of sense at $11 uranium. Fast forward to 2026, uranium spot price high 80s, and all of a sudden you have a country trying to build new nuclear energy capacity and it has no domestic production. So these assets weren't put to the side for geologic reasons. They were put aside for price reasons, and they'd probably be in line online today if it wasn't for that.
Good day, everybody. This is Steve Yang with Natural Resource Stocks, mining for stories that matter. And today I've got with me Stephen Gold. Stephen Gold is president and CEO of Jaguar Uranium. How are you, Stephen?
Good, Steve. Thanks for having me today.
Absolutely. Stephen, before we start, if you can just give us your company name, website, and ticker, how people can find you.
Absolutely. So we are Jaguar Uranium. You can find us at jaguaruranium.com. And our ticker is JAGU, JAGU on the NYSE American Exchange.
Awesome. Stephen, let's start with your value case. Tell me about where you guys are trading and, where do you think is the biggest disconnect looking at the company?
Yeah, sure. So we had gone public about, call it just almost 4 weeks ago. Company had been, I'd say, put together in the form of acquiring assets in South America over the course of the last, call it two and a half years. From our standpoint, obviously, as we shake out of the IPO here, you sort of look at a collection of assets around the world and where that growing supply deficit is going to come from at the uranium level, the supply level, and you got to consider where the next jurisdiction is going to be. So when you look around the world, South America, with its vast mining experience from a uranium and critical metal standpoint, really doesn't stand out as obvious in anyone's sort of list. It should, because it's, from our perspective, it's the last frontier as far as where you're going to go to find that new supply over the course of the next 15 years. So from a value proposition, I'll leave that to the investors and the analysts as far as what they want to attribute value. But from our standpoint, we've recently raised $25 million in our IPO just about a month ago. We're looking at about just around a $30-ish million market cap. And so when you put it all in the mixture and you consider the fact that our portfolio of assets are not grassroots, they are what we call second, third inning assets, to use a baseball analogy. One of our assets had been a mine before. The other ones have been exploration assets with substantial amounts of spend on it in the past. So when you put that together in the context of where new supply is going to come from, if it is South America, and then if you drill down, no pun intended, to something, even more sort of exciting, I think that when you look at the countries we're in, predominantly Argentina, where we have three assets, and then Colombia with another asset, you sort of have to look back and say, okay, so you got this $30 million company. They just raised $25 million on its IPO. What is the value of these properties that had, in one case been there before, and the others sort of are starting with their foot across the start line as far as exploration? We're not poking holes, totally blindly. There's a tremendous amount of intelligence that we have from past work.
So let's start with Argentina. You see you have three there. If you can tell us about the jurisdiction as a whole. I mean, my understanding is, things are getting permitted pretty quickly and moving things along. I mean, has that been your experience and knowledge of what you've seen in Argentina?
Yeah. So for those who have been following from a geopolitical standpoint, over the last call it 2, 2.5 years, there's been a new government that had a new government and new government mindset that had come into Argentina and has grown in support. Javier Milei, who is the president, had come in with definitely strong federal support, and over time that support has widened to the provincial level and the municipal level. To a great extent, I suppose you can classify him as very pro business, in line much with what we're seeing across the United States. And so what we've seen, and we could never have dreamed this to happen, because when we started amalgamating these assets, this was in its infancy. We saw some green shoots of it, but the relationship that we've seen between the Argentines at the government level and at the American level is really, it's really amazing. I sit here in Toronto, we joked earlier, maybe, Canada is the 51st state. We're exceptionally close to the US for many reasons. I would say, despite its distance, Argentina is equally close to the US in terms of mindset now. And what we're seeing in terms of addressing your permitting side, I would point investors to last Monday, March 2nd, we had announced that we had received our EIA approved for what is our largest exploration asset in country. And I would say, certainly from my standpoint, if you asked me 2 months ago when we expected to get it, it definitely wasn't, over the course of the last week and a half. We had thought later this year. So we see that as a very strong signal from the provincial government, where these permits are predominantly issued. We see this as a very strong signal that they want to see these assets into production as soon as we are able. And I would add, one other thing for the investor to comprehend is that Argentina is not new when it comes to nuclear energy. For almost 75 years, Argentina has been really the sort of the primary nuclear energy producer on the continent. It currently still has three reactors online, with plans to build another four. But a lot of the assets that are in Argentina had been assets owned by the government in the uranium supply over the course of the last 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 years. What had happened was, over the course of the latter half of the last century, the price of uranium had fallen. The government had said, okay, we're not going to do this mining anymore. They're great assets, but it's economic for us just to import from other countries. And it was the right call. Makes a lot of sense at $11 uranium. Fast forward to 2026, uranium spot price high 80s, and all of a sudden you have a country trying to build new nuclear energy capacity and it has no domestic production. So these assets weren't put to the side for geologic reasons. They were put aside for price reasons, and they'd probably be in line online today if it wasn't for that.
So, what stage are you guys in right now? You guys are early exploration, is that correct? And what are the mile, if you can tell me about the kind of what stage you're in and the milestones that you're looking at and kind of the timeline for the next 12 or 24 months?
So the cash we raised just about a month ago, that is certainly enough. Certainly, and from our standpoint, anyways, when we look at our budget, we think that'll give us about 2 years of exploration. And the idea would be, are we early exploration? I'd say, from a classification standpoint, I'd say yes. But again, we're working with assets that had either, in one case, been in production. One of our assets, the Huemul asset, has been in production in Argentina. And then the exploration properties, they've had a substantial amount of work done on them. And so, we are definitely early exploration from a category standpoint. But I'd say, maybe there's another word for it, because we're not going into these assets blind. We're not going into these assets from the standpoint that we're starting from zero. There's enough intelligence from the previous owners, who happen to be our larger shareholders, that we go into this with our foot across the start line, and hopefully get to a point where we're reporting, initial resources over the course of the next, call it 12 to 18 months.
So I hear you saying it's not a green field where you're just throwing darts. It just kind of you have a pretty good idea that these you have something there. So can you tell me about just kind of the model you're working with, and how reliable is the data? Are you using old data? I mean, and what needs to happen for you guys to confirm what you have?
Yeah, sure. So from our standpoint, we use the old data as a guide, but for a variety of regulatory reasons, we're not able to, we don't rely on those numbers. We ultimately have to go do it on our own. So the data is a guide, which we think will save us time and money when we ultimately develop, draw up our exploration program. So, for and worth noting, by the way, Steve, from the context of who we're surrounded by, and I say that at the corporate level, our largest shareholders are the likes of ISO Energy and Greenshift Commodities, and when we look back in time, these were the previous owners of our asset package. So, whether it's at the board level, which they are represented on, or the information level, from our standpoint, we feel exceptionally fortunate to be surrounded by the folks that had spent, their time and money on these assets in the past, so that when you look at milestones, we hope to be exploring at some point over the course of the next several weeks and months. We announced this morning, today is Tuesday the 10th, we announced this morning our outline for Argentina and in Colombia, and the idea is that we're going to start that. So we got 2 years of cash, great shareholders surrounding us, assets that had been there before, and really the opportunity to be able to move these assets forward quickly.
Steven, before we go to Colombia, can you tell me what you think you have down in Argentina?
Yeah, so I can tell you what I think we have is three assets that we think have been put to the side, not for any geological or metallurgical reasons, but from the standpoint of just simply price. So we think these assets work well in at current commodity prices, current spot prices, let alone contract prices. Again, we don't speak to the previous work that the previous owners had done. That's for them and their time. But from our standpoint, we feel quite excited that once we start our exploration program, that it's going to be, I'd say probably efficient is the best word I can use, because we're going into this with the mindset of where the previous success may have been, and we're able to hopefully zero in on what's worked in the past.
And if you can tell me about Colombia, I know that that's not your flagship, but what are your plans there? And my understanding about Colombia is it's good for permitting, but there are some questions about security. Can you address that a little bit?
Yeah, so the best way I explain, Colombia is that whatever one's view is from a security standpoint or a permitting standpoint or what have you, the rationale about our investment there is that this was a significant exploration asset in a what they call in Colombia, they call them departments. The U.S. it's states, and Canada it's provinces. They call it a department, and it's in the Department of Caldas. And it really depends where you are. So, the department that we're located in is very pro-mining department. I think for the viewers who are watching this may be familiar with two companies in particular who are also in our department. Number one is Collective Mining, which has been an absolute sensational success story, as well as Aris Mining. And they are within the same department over the last several years, have done tremendously well by shareholders, top shelf management teams. And we look at that and say, for the investor unfamiliar with Colombia, I would say, over the last 2.5 years, look at they've created multi-billion dollar companies over the course of the last several years under the current government. So from our standpoint, we're in a pro-mining area that is within a department that encourages mining. Obviously, you got to check all your boxes, but We're quite excited about it. And Colombia very much fits the mindset that the next wave of production, global production for uranium, to meet that approaching 200 million pound deficit over the course of the next 14 years, where is it going to come from? It's almost certainly either going to come from South America, or where else are you going to look? So we love Colombia, we love Argentina, and we think that both cases they're different, but they definitely offer what we think is upside and near-term exploration upside.
Stephen, I know you mentioned some other companies, but if you can tell me about just, in Colombia and Argentina, just if you can tell me about some neighbors you have or some comms that you guys can give for what you think you guys have there.
Yeah, sure. So in Colombia, as far as we know, we're the only meaningful exploration property in the uranium space. Our asset has a very significant rare earth component to it, from our understanding, subject of course to our own exploration. And so when we look at that, we sort of stand alone there. This is an asset that has been worked on quite well for the last 10, 12 plus years. So there's enough intel there that we believe there's a resource there, and we didn't buy it because we thought otherwise. And when you look in Argentina, again, so the assets that exist in country are sort of one of three categories. Either they so in every category they had been owned by the government before, except for some new discoveries. So in Argentina, we're part of the category. These assets had been owned and run by the government before. This is talking 30, 40 years ago, and then private enterprise had come in and purchased them. They weren't a focus for the company, and then we ultimately acquired them. The second component would be assets. For example, there's some discoveries, a couple of companies, PCHE and Blue Sky, people talk about frequently. These are great discoveries and are all part and parcel of the uranium theme in Argentina. And then when you look at the third category are various mines and assets across the country that may not be spoken for yet, and I'm sure the government's going to want to see those into production as well. So the answer to your question of who's surrounding us, the sort of non-answer I've given is the story. It's because it's unknown to the world. People think uranium, they think Canada, they think Namibia, they think Central Asia, Australia, United States, China has some, but nobody thinks South America. So to me, therein lies the opportunity. The answer to your question being no one really is the opportunity, in my view.
Could you tell me about the infrastructure in the area? Are there roads? I mean, tell me more about that.
Yeah, sure. So in Argentina, again, because these assets had either been worked over before or part of the government portfolio years ago, from a civil infrastructure standpoint, it's quite modern. Obviously, we have an exploration property that is a little bit out there, but there's a highway that runs right through it, or teams have visited it many, many times. There's towns nearby, so that provides labor pools and the like. So from a civil infrastructure standpoint, we're quite comfortable. Our former mine there called Huemul. Huemul used to be an asset that had been in production. As a matter of fact, the uranium grades at the time were quite attractive. It also had a 2% copper portion as well. So while it's true this mine used to be in production, I get asked all the time, is the infrastructure as far as a processing level, is that something that we can use? And the answer is no, because it's decades and decades and decades old. We're better off building our own. But the idea is to get to a point where we're able to demonstrate a sizable enough resource to dem to justify that. In Colombia, that is an asset in, again, a mining friendly department. Obviously, our teams have been there several times regularly, as a matter of fact. There's labor in the area, there's power in the area. It's just a question of us figuring out what we have in the ground in order to ultimately get down to the point where we're making a production decision.
Stephen, let's shift gears a little bit and go to your share structure. Could you break that down for us, as well as just ownership of institutions and insiders?
Yeah, sure. So we've got just over 15 million shares on a fully diluted, I apologize, on a basic basis. The largest shareholders are a combination of the vendors from whom we purchase assets from. So, likes of ISO Energy and Greenshift Commodities, they are the shareholders from who they surround us. They have representation on our board and so forth. Our largest institutional shareholder is a group out of New York called Sachem Cove. They have been tremendously successful in the uranium space, have supported us all along, and from that standpoint, on a combination basis, I would suggest that they're more than or at least approximately half of the shares outstanding, if not more, and the balance is almost entirely, call it institutional and high net worth. What I would say also is that of the 15.3-ish million shares we have outstanding on a basic level, all of the pre-IPO shares, with the exception of 10,000, so all of the pre-IPO shares, which is, I believe, just over 13 million shares, are locked up for 4 to 6 months post-IPO. So when we look at this and say, where's the opportunity from an investor, we look at this and say, you're not you're, you I'll leave the trading to the smarter and wiser, but we're definitely in a situation where the original shareholders, they're locked up. So the only free trading stock really is the IPO stock plus about 10,000 shares from prior to the IPO.
What about options and warrants?
Yeah, so the on an options and warrants basis, there's just under 3 million warrants at, I believe the weighted average price is about 286 a share, and then the options are closer to $4, I believe about 389, about 858,000. So, a lot of that is owned by, I call them insiders, whether it's our largest shareholders or management or what have you. So, from a putting my capital markets hat on, I look at that and say, okay, well, we probably don't have a situation where the insiders, of course, we're insiders. It's difficult to take the view that I think anyone would we believe in the story as much as we had when we accumulated these assets. So what I would say is that it's truly a tight sort of structure here. And when we look within sort of the lockups, and the warrants are locked up, and of course the options are locked up, it's re really a tight situation as far as free trading stock is concerned.
So you've got funds to do your thing for 2 more years. You don't have any plans to raise more funds, if I'm understanding you correctly. And then if you can tell me the plan, is it to keep the tight structure? I mean, it's pretty tight. Is that the plan moving forward?
Yeah, exactly. So we definitely want to see true to what our plans were when we were approaching our IPO and thereafter. The money we raise, we believe, will keep us working and give us a runway for the next 2 years. At the expiration level, it gives us an opportunity to what I call multiple shots on goal. The portfolio of assets are all within our expiration budget, and if there's success, we're able to allocate more money to it. If there isn't, then we can pull back from it. There are no plans, as I sit here now, to raise any money beyond what we have. I think it's sufficient. Obviously, down the road, I think every junior mining company would love to have tremendous success at the drill bit and cross that bridge when they come, in terms of what their money requirements will be thereafter. But as I sit here today, I can very comfortably tell the viewer that the cash we have in the bank right now is it's certainly suitable to meet our exploration goals over the course of the next 2 years.
Stephen, can you just briefly tell us about your experience and maybe the team around you that would give the confidence that you have the right pieces in place?
Sure. So the company was founded. I had come in shortly after its founding, but one of the gentlemen who had founded it, who's our currently our executive director, his name, executive chairman rather, his name is Luis Ducasse. And Luis had spent some time at the government level involved in the industry in Peru. And of course, that's important to us because from a LATAM standpoint, he is definitely the chief in charge within the company to deal with government permitting, putting assets together, advancing them to different permitting stages and so forth. And he's done a tremendous job. And then from our team on the ground, I look at the exploration side. You know, South America is very good at mining, but you don't typically think of it from a uranium or critical metal standpoint. So we sort of didn't try to reinvent the wheel. What we wanted to do was just work with those who knew these assets from the past. So in Colombia, we have our country manager, his name is Andres Caceres. He knows he's the asset quite well in Colombia, has been working on it for years, did his master's on the asset, so who better? In Argentina, we have a team who is either familiar with the points at which the government had owned them and done some exploration at the time, or had worked on them with previous owners as well at the private enterprise level, being the companies that had owned these assets before. So I sit here in Toronto, and obviously from a corporate standpoint, I have my portfolio of responsibilities, but from a success on the ground standpoint, we think we've surrounded these assets with people who know how to operate in Latin America and how to explore these particular assets best.
For those who are listening, Stephen Gold and Jaguar Uranium have not paid for this interview. They're not sponsors, and we are currently, I myself not currently an investor, although that may change as I continue to do research. Please do your own due diligence. I am not giving investment advice. One of the ways you can do your due diligence is to reach out to Stephen Gold, go on their website, follow their story. So, Stephen, if you can just tell us one more time your website, your socials, how people can reach you with questions and follow your story.
Yeah, sure. It's LinkedIn or X. It's Jaguar Uranium, and our website is www.jaguaruranium.com. The information, of course, that we post online is we try to be as clear and transparent with the investor community as we can. There's a tremendous amount of information we think on our assets, whether you look at obviously our filings leading into the IPO and thereafter. And so for those who are familiar with the industry will know whether it's ISO or GreenShift, they know that they were quite fond of these assets in the past. I think that it's not just our turn to own them, but rather I think it's our opportunity now at a point in time where we see the uranium price where it's at. These are what we think are very exciting exploration assets in one case that had been there before, and hope to be able to deliver that. We've got a very strong balance sheet. We have no debt, and hope to be able to deliver exploration success over the course of the next 12 to 18 to 24 months.
Stephen, one more time, what's your ticker and where are you trading?
Yeah, it's JAGU, JAGU on NYSE American.
Stephen, thanks for your time and telling us about the Jaguar Uranium story. And hope to have you back and follow your story again.
My pleasure. Thank you, Steve.